Hi, Bean.
Here she is, Miss America.
You know exactly when we start recording, so you can start making yourself known, huh?
Hello, yes, I am here. This podcast is about me. Who is my Bailey? Just crawling all over you.
This couch is so big.
And your microphone is so small, yet somehow she has managed to perfectly block it with her little body.
I'm going to have to yell for a little bit until she moves.
Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie. And I'm... Can I say a little secret?
You got a little secret, Cassie?
I'm kind of excited for this episode.
Really? Is it because it's called Mummy on the Orient Express?
Oh, it could be.
That's right. This is Series 8, Episode 8, Mummy on the Orient Express.
Just... The title, I think, gives it away, but in a good way.
Yeah, like, it's one of those where it's like, well, I gotta see what that's about.
Well, especially since, because you and I are both Agatha Christie fans.
Yeah.
I suppose. Fans feels like the wrong word because you and I like Agatha Christie. Neither of us have read an Agatha Christie novel.
I have started Murder on the Orient Express like 2 or 3 times. I have never read it. But we have watched specifically Kenneth Branagh's adaptations of the Agatha Christie novels.
Hercule Poirot.
Yeah, Hercule Poirot. Yeah.
So it's one of those things where it...
It's that, but with a mummy on it.
Yes, and that's why I am excited, because I'm like, oh, this feels like some kind of hooey-gooey, scooby-dooey, timey-wimey, let's go, baby. If I'm disappointed, I will let everyone know.
Because I will say that we've talked a little bit before about how it just strange coincidence that Doctors 10 through 13 each get an episode with
a universal monster. Yeah.
This one is maybe the best of them. It's either the best or the second best, depending on how you feel about the next one.
Okay.
But I think I think this one and the next one are both great, and I don't necessarily want to compare them, but I love this episode. This is one of, in my opinion, Capaldi's best episodes. I'm curious to see what you're going to think about it.
Especially because the last time you were really excited about an episode's title was Time Heist, and that let us down
just so intensely.
I will say, I am very pleased with how far we got. And I guess a little bit of a spoiler for other things. I'm pleased with how far we got in the show, because then when we went to the Doctor Who exhibition at the San Diego Comic-Con Museum.
Like 90% of it was stuff you had seen. There was only a couple things I had to be like, nope, you can't look at this yet.
Well, I could look. I just couldn't read.
Yeah, you just couldn't read the description. Because I don't care if you see... like the maestro's costume, but if you knew who was playing them, that would be sad for me.
Yeah.
But even then, that wasn't written there, but that's fine. Whatever.
But they had the, like, especially in regards to Time Heist, they had the guy.
Yeah. They had the teller.
the
teller with his weird little butt.
We didn't get to see his butt, but
like, there were lots of characters we did get to see the butt of.
There have been plenty of things in this show where I'm specifically like, oh, I'm excited to find out what this thing is. Mm-hmm. And then when I find out what it is, I'm like, oh, I don't know why I was excited for that thing. There have been other things that have taken me by pleasant surprise, i.e. canine. I don't know why in my head I went, I think it's because at first I was like, oh, canine is just going to be like Goddard from Jimmy Neutron Boy Genius.
And then he's like this.
And then he is so pleasant.
He is a little weirdo.
He's so perfect. And I love him.
But no, this is Mummy on the Orient Express. And we are in kind of a weird place with the Doctor and Clara, if you remember the end of Kill the Moon.
Yeah, Clara's pissed.
Yeah, but they're still going on adventures together. Do you have any, this isn't a Cassie Professy question, this is just personal curiosity. What do you think might be going on there?
Oh my God, it feels the same way as like when you get in a fight with somebody at work, but you still have to go to work. Like, to me, this feels like Clara is looking at what she and the doctor does as part of her job. Part of her job is...
You think there's like a sense of obligation to Clara right now? Where she's like, I can't just leave.
It feels the same way as like, you know, when you have a problematic dinner you have to go to, there are people that are going to be there that, you know, are like, like something might come up, but like, I have to go to this dinner because...
Social obligations
or like, oh man, this is grandma's like 95th Christmas dinner. She's been in the hospital four other times. Like, four times ago we went, oh, we had grandma's last dinner. And now every year after that, it's been one more. So this is one more dinner. Like in that sort of sense where there is a sense of like, I don't know when this thing is going to end for me. And based off of what I know about, in the context of my like hypothetical situation, it's the like, I know that someday grandma's going to die. So I don't know when that is going to happen. And I will be very upset if I don't spend as much, if I don't spend any opportunity where there is going to be pomp and circumstance around it. I feel the same way about how Clara looks at what she and the doctor do, because she's a smart girl. She knows that companions come and go.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a part of it that's like, my time is running out. I don't know how long I'm going to be able to be a companion, especially since she is in a space where she has a person that she is dating and,
She's a teacher. She's got classes to get to. Yeah, she's got a job.
Yeah, so I do wonder how much of that is... How much of that we will see if there is, if I am correct.
Assuming the writers didn't just drop it.
Yeah. Well, I would hope not. I mean, you said it wasn't a Prophecy point. So
yeah, it's not a Prophecy point. No, no. But maybe we should get to the Prophecy points.
No, come on, man. Tell me if I'm correct or not.
To tell you the premise of this.
Do the writers forget the whole? Don't. Okay. No, that's more of what I'm trying to get at is I'm going to be really annoyed if it's like, oh, yeah, they wrote this episode before Kill the Moon. So.
I mean, I don't actually mind telling you this because this is like one of the first things said in it. Clara basically asks for one last hurrah.
Okay.
She's like, we're not going to hang out anymore. So this is our last time doing this together.
Okay.
And so the doctor has picked the Orient Express to be an adventure that they go on together.
Okay.
It's like a fun little thing. And then.
Oh, yeah. One more.
And then. Yeah. One more. And
one
then,
more.
And then a mummy shows up.
Yeah. She had the last thing already. And this is just one more.
But maybe we should get into the Casper Fassi so we can see what one more looks like.
Oh, poo.
The first question here is about said mummy on the Orient Express.
Okay.
This mummy has a very unique trait that makes it even more terrifying. I have some options for you, but I'm curious what comes to mind when I tell you a mummy has a unique trait.
Okay, so there's a couple options.
Okay.
The mummy could be made out of bugs, a la Oogie Boogie. A unique trait indeed.
Bug mummy. Coming to theaters this summer.
Bug mummy. Mummy could have a scary mouth.
Scary mouth?
Yeah.
Like a
like
the fish people mouth when they were vampires of Venice, like sharp teeth mouth.
Yeah, they could have the sharp tooth mouth because they seem to really like that as a scary thing on the show. Because we've been watching Has-Been, Hotel and Hell of a Boss. It could just be covered in eyes in like a weird, gross kind of way.
Biblically accurate mummy.
Yeah, just horrifying. Like it's the mummy. It's a mummy made of souls. So it's just like a bunch of like like peering out through the things. The mummy could be my mom. I'm kidding.
Your mommy? Mommy on the Orient Express?
You my mummy. Hey, mummy could be a U.S. president.
Hello, I'm a mummy here and I'm scaring you. Haru.
I mean, there's one way scarier, I think, than Nixon now that isn't a mummy
yet.
But I
can't do a Trump impression, so...
Everybody has a Trump impression. That's all I'm saying.
I'm a mummy.
Everybody has one. I've got the best wrappings. I don't think mine's very good, but I do enjoy doing it. And when anybody catches on, they know exactly what I'm doing. I have the best dressings.
They took out my organs. They said, these are the best organs. They took them through my nose, said it was the best nose.
Yeah. Ew. I'm sorry to every Egyptian. that we would ever insinuate that our current president would ever be memorialized as a mummy. That's disrespectful.
Well, I will tell you that I actually had to flex my my D&D DM muscles a little bit when it came to coming
tentacles.
Up with the
tra- yeah, go on.
When it came to coming up with the traits for this mummy, because it's pretty inventive, I think.
Okay.
So one of these three that I tell you is true, and the other two are ones that I made up.
Okay, and not again. Not again.
The trait is either A, when it kills you, it turns you into sand.
Okay.
B, when you see it, you lose your ability to speak.
Okay.
Or C, only its next victim can see the mummy.
Ooh. I like C the most just because I think that that's a very interesting story mechanic.
Uh-huh.
When it kills you, though, you turn to sand.
Uh-huh.
Is also kind of fun. Oh, these are all kind of interesting. Hold on.
Yes. Zach's brain did good.
I mean, I'm leaning more towards C.
Okay.
Do I get any kind of a hint? Can I get any?
I don't know how much more of a hint I could give you, other than because without like just giving it away, because I spent a lot of time coming up with those other two options. I don't want to ruin it.
Can I ask what the cold open of this episode is?
The cold open is the first kill of the mummy.
Okay. Since I'm at a very unique point right now, and I don't want you to remind me where my brain has scrambled which letter was attached to which thing. So I remember I liked C, so I will go with C.
Okay. C was only the next victim can see the mummy.
Okay.
All right. Well, all right. So Cassie's prediction is that this mummy's unique trait is only its next victim can see it. And the second one I thought was a little more of a fun one. Although I was quite happy with my answers. But still, the second one, on the Orient Express, there is a jazz singer performing a cover of a hit Queen song. Which Queen song do you think the jazz singer is performing, Cassie?
Damn you. Okay. It's got to have something to do with with mummies. This show is too cheeky to be like, oh, we're going to have a jazz singer sing Fat Bottomed Girls for sure.
Can you imagine a jazz version of Bicycle?
Yeah.
Bicycle, bicycle.
You know, there was one time I got extremely drunk and there was a jazz singer around. This is all still part of the story. I seem to remember them singing a jazzy version of Bicycle, but I also could have made that up in my drunken stupor.
Fat bottom girls will be riding today.
Yeah, I mean, literally, those are the only two Queen songs I know. That's a joke. I know more, but that's like when somebody asks you, what's your favorite color? And you're like,
Since you're put on the spot, you forget everything that exists except for one. What's your favorite color? Dogs.
People. I don't see color.
What's your favorite color? Domino's pizza?
Damn it. Okay. Can I change my first answer? Because the second answer I think might inform the first answer.
Okay.
Because is it another one bites the dust?
And another one gone. And another one gone.
Because I feel like there is a through line there.
Yeah, you could. You could.
I'm trying to read what you, the audience, can't see is that I'm trying to read Zach's mind through the power of our love, as it is Valentine's Day. Zach, Zach, if you love me, you'll get this. Will be your present to me. Is telling me I'm right. Or it could be Killer Queen.
Could be Killer Queen.
Because we don't know, kind of mummy. Yeah, we don't know at least you're not explicitly telling me the gender of the mummy.
I kept saying it.
Yeah. Them. You plebe.
Well, I would say it at this point because it's a mummy. I don't know that it has sexual identity anymore.
Well, yeah, but also so the song isn't Killer Queen then.
Very well, couldn't be.
Okay, it's not then.
All right.
Can you let me know? Is in darkness, so I can't look into your eyes and see if your pupils are dilating or not.
I hope that all the audience now imagines that I'm just like sitting here shrouded in darkness.
You effectively
are. Like a Bond villain.
You effectively are.
Answer me my riddles too. Answer me the prophecy. My questions too about Doctor Who.
Because here's the thing, is I do feel like I have a pretty solid case with they turn to sand and another one bites the dust.
Yeah.
I do think that that is a pretty solid through line of thinking. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be mad if I get both wrong, though.
That is true. You're trying to hedge a bet and see if you.
Okay, I think I'm going to hedge my bets and say dust and another one bites the dust.
So you're changing your first answer?
I think so.
All right.
I think so, because I'm going to be.
So because if you're right about the first one and here's you change your answer.
Am I right about the first one?
You might be.
Okay. Damn it. So I'll keep the first answer then, because I think that's what you're I think that's what you're trying to tell me. So now I don't know what the second answer
would be. I've sent Cassie back into the labyrinth once again. Chased down by Queen and a mummy.
I'm gonna literally send you into orbit if I keep right. this answer, and my second guess was right.
Why would I do that to you, Cassie?
I don't know, Zach. Why would you do that to me?
On St. Valentine's Day, you think I would do such a thing to you?
Yes. Because we don't celebrate. When we started dating, we went, yeah, we're not doing this. It's a commercial holiday, man. I don't need a holiday to tell me to buy my partner flowers.
I'll just do it because she's feeling bad.
I'll just insist that he buys me potted plants instead. Killer Queen. That's my song.
All right. So Cassie's choices for the prophecy today are that only the next victim can see the mummy, and that there is a jazz performer singing Killer Queen. And we will find out together if those are true as we watch Series 8, Episode 8, Mummy on the Orient Express.
Again, I will send you into orbit if I'm wrong. You're going to have to edit this podcast from
beyond the grave.
You're going to have to edit the podcast from the International Space Station.
As a mummy yourself.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say from the Hubble telescope, and I went, that's here. That is not in space.
Today's episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by Big Dan's Self-Help Fight Club. Are you struggling with self-confidence, self-image, or even just simple motivation? Do you want to find it while being suplexed through a mahogany table? Then come on down to Big Dan's Self-Help Fight Club, the only place that will teach you self-love the hard way. Big Dan Mercetti is licensed as both a professional therapist and a fourth-degree black belt, so he can literally knock some sense into you. Whether you're looking for roundhouse kick affirmations or a shoulder throw into a breakthrough, Big Dan is your number one choice to heal your mind and break your body. Big Dan's Self-Help Fight Club, where the first rule is don't talk about yourself that way. And the second rule is to have good health insurance. And we are back from Mummy on the Orient Express.
So I was wrong about the song.
You were wrong about the song, but you were correct about only being able to see the mummy before you die.
Yeah.
For 66 seconds.
Tonight on 66 Seconds.
So what'd you think, Cassie? How'd you feel about it?
I liked it.
I really like this episode, too. I think there's not a lot of, like, great big actor moments in it. Like, there's not any, like, dramatic.
There's no monologues.
There's no, like, real intense emotional scenes. Like,
there are a lot of, like, subtle things.
Yeah, and Capaldi makes a lot of choices that really add to the character. I think one of my favorites is he's laying in bed talking to himself, mm-hmm. but he's not just talking to himself. Whenever he wants to, like, respond, he's doing an impression of four. He's doing, like, a Tom Baker impression.
Because you know what this sounds like, don't you?
No.
Do tell me. A mummy that only the victim can see. I was being rhetorical. I know exactly what this sounds like.
I didn't catch him doing an impression.
Yeah, it's not.
I was just thinking, like, oh, I do the same thing. Like, there have fully been times where you will call me while I'm driving and I am 1000% having a conversation with myself so that I finish my thought and go, one sec, hey, even though there is nobody else in the car. It's just me.
But yeah. So the part, like specifically, there's a part where he's saying something akin to a mummy that someone only could see. I know exactly what that sounds like, where he's specifically like dropped his accent. He's dropped his voice quite a bit. And I don't have hard confirmation, but I feel like he's trying to do a Tom Baker impression.
Fair.
That's what it felt like to me. And there's a little things like when he like offers a little cigarette container and it's full of jelly babies.
Yeah. I love that idea so much.
Because I've seen it done with candy cigarettes. That was a bit on Community, but I've never seen it done with just a different candy altogether.
Yeah. I used to offer people butterscotch candies out of my backpack.
Like a grandma?
I had an entire layer of hard candies in my backpack at any given point.
You're really Benjamin Buttoning through life.
Yeah. And now it's fruit snacks. Soon it will be Gushers.
And by the end, baby food.
Mm-hmm. What other things could the doctor keep in a cigarette holder other than jelly babies? Because here's my thing with those. I don't know if I'm not entirely certain that those were jelly babies because we've seen them. Those bitches are long. These were like fat and round.
Really plump babies.
Jelly infants. But
they had the coating on it, the like little dusty coating.
I guess.
Jelly toddlers.
Yeah, jelly infants.
These jellies have words.
Jelly babes.
Jelly babies. They're hearing Doctor Who.
Whoa. Zach, you should sell that to like
The BBC. I should enjoy that.
What would you keep in a cigarette case?
Ooh, Reese's peanut butter cups, just like two of them smushed together.
That would get melty.
I'm not seeing a problem.
I would do Chiclets.
You just open it and just spore out.
So many, or like a tiled flat layer of Sprees.
I would really like
a mix of chewy and hard Sprees, so you don't know what you're gonna get.
You know those like springy snakes that show up in like fake things of toffee.
Ooh.
I would love to get a bunch of little ones of those and just be like cigarette. Bring.
There's like 18 attacking somebody then.
I like that episode. I like this episode a lot. I think it's got a lot. It's a really fun setting.
Just yes.
The space train. And everyone's dressed up in like period costumes.
Going off the rails on a spacey train. Sorry, I just had to get that out. Atmospheric. It's people still have phones and communication, but it's the roaring 20s.
Yeah, everyone's there for like a period party. Everyone's dressed like they're on, you know, the Agatha Christie Orient Express. Including the doctor and Clara. Clara's dressed in her cute little flapper dress.
I hated her hair.
Really?
Yeah.
What about it?
There's something about the side swept bang that's pinned down that to me reads, I'm trying to look like I am four. And it could be like, I think
it's period appropriate to what they were going for.
No, like finger waves and like there's, you know, you have like the little like mini baby bang, like that's period appropriate. I don't like being the woman that is like criticizing how other people look. That's not my bag.
Your bag is hair, makeup and costumes, though.
Yeah, it is.
But the doctor has his like a big old like little tie that he doesn't normally wear.
I liked his big tie, though.
Everyone's got their tiny little specs.
Yeah.
Not even like true glasses. They're just little specks.
I think they're called like pinces.
I have no idea, but I'll take your word for it.
I don't know. I always just refer to them as cool guy glasses.
But then
people usually know what I'm talking about.
But then going back even further in time is this mummy who is just full on decomposing.
Yes. I think my gripe with that is I know that they're saving the reveal for what the mummy is for the end. Excuse me. I wish that there was some indication on the mummy himself of what he is.
And what, like the, like you're talking about the soldier thing?
Yeah.
Because they do indicate that it's like under the bandages that he's got the same insignia as the banner.
Yes, but there is,
it would have been nice
no
if they
reason
were like,
for him to be in bandages then if he is a soldier that is still soldiering.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe if the bandages looked more like tattered.
Like clothes.
Yeah,
like tattered army uniform. Attire. Yeah.
That could be interesting. Also, we don't know what his uniform looked like.
It wasn't rolled up ace bandages, though, dude. I ain't never seen one soldier go out saying, OK, I'm ready for war. Let me just get my 1500 feet of ace wrap bandages.
He's got problems in all his joints. All his joints are so sore.
Like, you can explain that away all you want. What I'm saying, though, is that there was no indication. So this, for me, this episode suffered from the same thing that a lot of them do, which is, here's a reveal. Shiny, shiny, sparkle, sparkle. Aren't you amazed? Are you not entertained? We've successfully doctored the Who.
We've successfully doctored the Who.
And it's just, okay. All right.
I do like that there is sort of like there is a subtle thing there where they talk about how there is some sort of phrase that you can say to the creature's called the Foretold,
yeah.
Which is a great name.
Yeah,
I do think the Foretold is it feels both magic-y and science-y, which is a nice place for Doctor Who to ride the line.
I think it's the fact that he has this really cool name.
Mm-hmm.
He has this really cool premise, but he just looks like a haunted house mummy. I think that's the part that I'm getting hung up on, is it's like there was not an interesting look to go with everything else about this creature.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since this show has such a long history of these like very intricate and beautiful monsters and adversaries, to just throw a full on mummy ride mummy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that bitch looked like he could have been in the ceiling at Universal Studios, and they just dusted him off and went, perfect.
I mean, I agree on a certain sense that there you could do interesting things with the mummy, but I also think that taking it a bridge too far, like how far do you take it?
Even
before
if they
it's
had
like
made
sus-
his bandages like blue.
Yeah.
Green, something, make it look more like tattered clothes that have just been wrapped around, so you still have something that is almost resemblance of a mummy.
Mm-hmm.
But they are not using bandages, they're using something else.
I did hear you complimenting the mummy's footwork.
I did like his footwork.
Fofui?
More energy, more footwork. Yeah, the dragging, that's also just a really yummy stretch that I like to do as well.
That wasn't an acting choice. He just had a Charlie horse he had to work out.
Yeah, he just wanted to stretch the top parts of his foot.
Get them shin splints taken care of.
Which I suppose, like, if your job in the show is mummy.
Yeah, you're going to put everything into.
Slowly approach takes exactly 66 seconds to approach a person that is screaming at you.
Another great little adage to that mystery is the 66 second thing. Like, there's no way, like, we as an audience could figure it out because it's sci-fi gobbledygook in the end. But it is just, like, a nice little bit of flavor.
Yeah, it's not 60.
Yeah.
It's not 50 seconds. It's...
Like, 66 is short enough to work on television, but it's still got, like, a slightly evil connotation with it being two sixes.
Ah.
I wonder if it's 66 seconds and 6 milliseconds.
Could be.
And then we've got this undercurrent plot that this is the last... adventure that Clara and the Doctor are going to have together.
I liked that the episode did kind of split itself in twain.
Mm-hmm.
Where it got to a point where it was the Doctor with, yes, it was Clara was there, but the episode was not, it was bookended with Clara and Doctor, and the middle chunk being here, let's have some other companions for the Doctor, if but for a moment.
Well, there is something to be said of they are, you know, metaphorically separated. And so now they have literally separated them into different parts of the train.
Yes.
They cannot reach one another. And I think that was a very smart thing to do. I also like the way that Clara has come around to wanting to be around the Doctor again for this one last adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are levels of like grief with it. Like she talks about different stages of grief that she basically has gone through. including the, like, she assumes the doctor will come around at some point for dinner. She's like, that's not going to be like, just because we're not going on adventures doesn't mean we're not friends, right? And the doctor's like, yeah, I guess I could come around for dinner. And the subcurrent of like, I don't do that.
Yeah, because I wrote down, like, I am having to remember that this is the same doctor who did come around for dinner.
Yeah.
For Amy and Rory.
Yeah. But only like twice.
But only twice. And then he got them stuck.
Got them stuck. And then, but even then before that, he would like pick up other companions to go with. That was where he met Nefertiti and Hunter guy whose name's escaping me. Like, he would pick up other adventurers. Like, he doesn't really stop. Mm-hmm. He just sort of comes over for dinner because they wanted to live a normal life, but he doesn't want to let his friends go. And it sounds like Clara kind of wants the same thing, but Capaldi doesn't sound as down for that as Smith did.
Capaldi is playing the Doctor as way more angsty and just pissed off.
There's a level of like, I'm too old for this shit from him.
Which, like, in fairness, if we're playing along, if we're feeding into the same metaphor that I had mentioned, or not metaphor, hypothetical situation of like going to a family dinner, even though you know that there are going to be problematic things said by aunts and uncles, and you're only going because, well, this is, you know, grandma's been sick, this might be the last one.
Mm-hmm.
There is a certain point, I feel like, where the older you get as an adult and as somebody who is like, oh, I'm responsible for my own life,
mm-hmm.
where then you realize, oh, I don't have to go to those. I don't have to do what anybody else wants me to do.
I don't have to do things that make me actively miserable.
I can stay home. And I feel like there is a certain attitude attached with the doctor in that case of, oh, I don't have to do the human things.
Yeah.
I don't have to show up every so often just for a pleasant hello. That would make me a nice person, but I'm not a nice person. I have a job to do.
Yeah.
And it's pleasant when I have people around to accompany me on those jobs and for me to spend my time with, since I have plenty of that in store, but I don't have to do any of the things that I don't want to if it's actively making me sad.
Yeah,
knowing that they are they have a limited clock,
mm-hmm.
and I don't.
There's a part of it where it feels like the doctor has sort of assuaged his guilt from the time war now that he saved Gallifrey, and as a result he is less emotional, like, broadly. Like, he's less, not human, but he's just a different kind where he's,
there's
like,
not a facade anymore. He's not having to be the, like, this doctor by no means is Peter Pan.
Yeah, he's not doing big, like, oh, I'm going to take you in a big hug and we're going to have a nice emotional cry.
We're going to skip around and I'm going to, we're going to say nonsensical gobbledygook.
This doctor is way more like, oh, you're probably going to die, but in the process of you dying, I might be able to save other people. Yeah. There's a very, like, what's the term for it? Utilitarian way this doctor approaches things.
Yeah.
Which I agree with Clara can feel heartless, but is also just like, this is the thing that I do. Like, I do it because
this
other
is the
people
thing
can't.
I do. And this is the thing that I have always done.
Yeah. And I do it because other people can't or won't.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to Clara a bit, like I said, Clara is going through a lot of stages of grief with releasing the doctor. What's the term for it? I guess this is more like bargaining, where she was remembering someone saying that hatred is.
I wrote it down. You're going to fuck it up.
Yeah, I wrote it down, too.
Hatred is a strong emotion to waste on someone you don't like.
Yeah. And so the sort of like, you have.
I heard it at a concert. Yeah. Which is such a, that's such a young person thing. So somebody said this thing at a concert and it really impacted me.
She was like toasted. She was a little roasty toasty at a bar. Heard someone on stage and went, yeah, yeah.
I mean, the way that happens to me every single day of my life, where I'll hear something on a television show, I'm like, Oh my God, that's so profound. I would have never thought of that stuff.
But it's, I do think that actually is a pretty profound quote, that like the people who are going to upset you the most are not people that you dislike. The people that you do, that people yeah. that you care about the opinions of.
Another quote I liked was, old ladies die all the time. It's practically their job description.
Yeah, I had heard you like actively laugh at that one. Another one that I heard that you really enjoyed was, I'm the doctor and I'll be your victim this evening. Are you my mummy?
Yeah. Well, because I know you and I were both thinking, are you my mummy, this entire time.
You had said it like three times before we started recording every yeah. time I mentioned the title of the episode.
Yeah.
One that I really like.
It's funny. This doctor, kind of an ass, but funny.
Yeah, it's very like, how do I just, like, you know how a lot of characters get like autism coded? You know, we get like our Sheldon Coopers. This is the most, this feels like very accurate for like a character to be autism coded.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's not the like neurotic, it's the sarcastic. It's the heartless, unfeeling, like, what did you want me to say?
There's a clip going around right now of a high schooler that wore a sign that says I support ICE, like, and they deliberately wore it like around school trying and like filming people trying to get reactions. Mm-hmm. And one kid who's clearly on the spectrum like walks up and says, I'm gonna punch you in the face. This is the kid responds, you're gonna get in trouble. And he goes, okay, and then decks him. And it just, that feels so much like this doctor, just like the like, you're an asshole, I'm going to hit you.
Okay.
12 punches Nazis. I think that's canon. One of my favorite quotes, that it was when the doctor basically reveals that Gus has tried to get the doctor on this train multiple times, and this is the first time that he's bitten. And Clara's like, you brought us here. This wasn't like some fun romp. You knew this was going to be dangerous. And I was like, I didn't know. I certainly hoped.
Another one that I specifically liked was, I always like busting out the psychic paper because I'm always curious what is going to be on the other end.
Uh-huh.
And the doctor's saying, I'm your worst nightmare. Oh my God, a mystery shopper?
Really? That's your worst? All right, fine, whatever.
It's
when writers find really amusing ways to use it that I love.
It's the psychic paper being a cheeky asshole as well.
You think on the other side, the psychic paper's got a little face going?
Yeah. Or the little, what was my favorite, like, emoticon, XP, just.
Gotcha.
Teehee, bitch.
Don't use me all the time, doctor.
Despite there being a lot of, like, little things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I feel about it turning into from like space train to space train D&D adventure from hell. You're on my train now, bitches.
Come on, Gus.
Figure out what's happening before things go crazy.
Yeah.
I'm going to cut off your oxygen and make you float around in the space like I did the chefs.
I'm going to eject people that I think are less important than you. And you're going to have to look at their bodies as they float by the train windows.
Yeah, like, okay, the chef's always important. Fuck you, Gus. I know this is a fact because I started watching Vanderpump Villa. And the one person throughout the entire villa that everybody said was, like, always showing up, having a good attitude and, like, getting his shit done was none other than the chef. Fuck anybody who says the chefs aren't important.
I really like Gus as a character, though. Like, there's a lot of
yeah, because he's a D&D little fucking shit from hell.
Well, it's more the like, you get the,
it's
little,
it's a Zach machination. That's why you like
a
it.
Zachination, yes. I do like, well, what I like about it is you get the subtle hint that something's up with him first when he's like, when they walk up to the door and they're like, computer, open the door. And he's like, call me Gus.
And no.
And it's also like, what is that? Does that stand for something? Because he's not elaborating on it. And then later when he takes over the train, I love that his symbol is just like a little monocle that appears on the computer screen.
Of course you do.
And also just, it's a great voice. Like, that guy's, I had his name here.
I made you look it up.
John Sessions is the actor's name.
I know him from something.
We can look over his IMDb page later. Nothing jumped out at me, but his voice is incredible for this kind of character. This is very much like,
Well, whatever you do, I'm very, like, safe and far away right now, so I could just sort of control all the little mechanisms as I like. I can eject people, I can extract the oxygen, and I'm safe no matter what happens. At the end of the day, I will either know more about the mummy, or you'll all be dead, or I won't know more about the mummy, and you'll all be dead.
It's something where, as we were watching it, I was like, Zach is going to pocket this for something else.
The only disappointment I have about that is how little contribution the other scientists in the room make.
You don't even know that they're scientists until the doctor specifically says, you're all scientists. Because we do have the one interaction with the professor.
Yeah, the train conductor says that they're like, there's doctors and professors coming out of their ears. But they don't say anything. The only one that we really know is the professor of alien mythology. That's the only one we really talk to. Everyone else has no speaking lines or is like the train engineer.
I mean, they all look baffled all the time. Like, how good are you at your jobs then? You just look confused.
I know that the script did have to get trimmed down significantly for time. My understanding was the original premise of the train was that it was traveling to the seven wonders of the cosmos.
Mm.
And so that had to get trimmed down for time. So I assume that maybe more of these scientists contributed more in some draft, and just in the effort to get it to fit the show's runtime, it just got trimmed down to like two characters, which, you know, fine. I don't know what they would add that wouldn't just be something another character says anyway. It just feels like a weird addendum to have, like, we've got all these smart people on the train and then like the doctor is solving everything.
Yeah.
It's like the one friend in the escape room that solves every puzzle.
That's why, because he was in the 1996 Adventure of Pinocchio.
Oh, OK.
Yeah. My dad was a big Pinocchio guy.
a Geppetto head.
Yeah, for whatever reason,
I assume that's the name for Pinocchio fans.
Pinocchio was one of my dad's favorite things. So we had every up until like, you know, the whatever version of Pinocchio that came out until 2018 we had.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's in this one. It's a good one. But the one thing that I do like is while the doctor and all of these scientists and smart people are having these discussions of what's going on, I like that the doctor is specifically like, great, I'm so sorry, whoever sees the foretold next, you need to tell me everything you know about him. I'm so sorry, that means that you're dying. You're actively on your way out the door. It is so important to my research that you just give me a rundown of everything you're seeing and experiencing. Meanwhile, Clara and Maisie are having this like very pleasant chat.
Well, Clara's like trying to comfort someone who's had like a really traumatizing
day.
They're
helping each other.
Yeah.
Because she's like, damn, you're in grief and you didn't even really like this woman that much, so you're feeling guilty. And meanwhile, Maisie's like, you're on a train with somebody that you're saying you're like super unhappy with, but like you're still hanging out and spending time with them. Like, clearly you like this person enough that you want to stick around.
Like, and when we saw you on the train earlier, you were like lit up around him. Like you clearly enjoy his company. You were just upset.
Yeah. So I like that they're, but it feels like when you're like, yeah, I'm really upset. Like I just did not do, I didn't have a good day at work. And somebody else is like, yeah, I get that. One of my residents died. So I also didn't have a good day at work. And you're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like you didn't have a good day at work. Like, oh, that sucks. Well, you didn't have a good day at work. Oh, that sucks. And it's just both of you being like,
I do like specifically what Maisie is touching on. And I think what Clara also hints at it too in their conversation, that the doctor and Clara are not romantic.
No,
but they are something more than friends.
Platonic, I would say.
Right. Yeah, there's a love there. There's something there that we see often enough that to really have a proper description for it, like, because they're not like a romantic couple, but clearly like going to go on adventures in ways that normal friends don't, especially adult friends.
It's friendship in the it's ride or die friendships. Like, there is a word for it.
Yeah. Well, it's specifically like how many people in the world show up to your house basically every day to take you somewhere?
I know exactly who. Best friends. They are best friends. And not just like, oh my God, you're my best friend. But like, the people that you can whisk spirit away. And then when you're like, okay, goodbye, I'm leaving. And then you have a 2-hour conversation standing outside of your one of the friends' cars.
The
people that are best friends will have 2-hour conversations outside of a parked car.
Yeah, they are.
Not inside the car where it's nice and warm, but outside where it's really cold and people can see what you're talking about.
They are two souls intertwined platonically.
Yeah.
Which is a very interesting dynamic to
play. It's so upsetting because there is a term for it, but a fucking cult ruined it.
Was the term?
Twin flame.
Oh, okay.
So twin flame, like, once upon a time was a term that one would use to be like, you are, like, we are
of the same stuff.
At one point in time, like, we could have been one person, but, you know, if you want to get really woo-woo with it, like, if everybody is connected by energy and everything in the world is energy, we are made of the same energy. We are twin flames. And then there was a cult that came up and it completely ruined the term. So I'm trying to find a better, different term for it. But for this particular case, like, that is something that you could definitely use for what the Doctor and Clara are, where they are two parts of a whole, but they're not necessarily, they're not romantic. They're not at each other's heels and chomping at the bit. But it is something where it's a, like, at the very least, Clara being the human in this equation is more than willing to do whatever she can for the Doctor.
Yeah.
Likewise, the Doctor feels the same way for her. It's just dampened down by the number of people that he has been that person for over the past 60 years.
Yeah, this is way more
looking at the show's canon.
This is way more what I wanted the Doctor and Rose's relationship to be.
Yes.
Because especially when Tennant took over, that dynamic became so much more like romantically charged in a way that I was never fully into.
Well, because it's how I perceived Nine and Rose.
Yeah.
Which is what I really liked. And it was a like, oh, this is somebody who's just really excited to have a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And just somebody who is so excited to have this person that he can look out for and somebody who is just as willing to go up and bat for him when he can't.
Mm-hmm.
And then they made it weird and sexual, and then that happened forever.
Like
until Ten and Donna, because I think that's where it came back up and we had this interesting, like, power duo.
Yeah, they had to make it. They made Donna and Ten interesting by her being so, like, intensely, no, we are not an item.
Yeah.
As opposed to Martha, who was always kind of like an unrequited, and Rose, who was a star-crossed lover thing.
Yeah.
I much prefer this dynamic of them being just like two. They're like, they're just in a very intense friendship.
Yes.
Like, you know, their friendship's a little weird. And
I'm a big fan of weird friendships.
And there are times you're like, I'm glad that you're okay with my weird friendships. And I'm now, you know why, because I watch Doctor Who, baby.
My favorite thing about my partner is that he watches Doctor Who. So he's okay with all my weird friendships.
But it does take a little bit of a turn at the very end of the episode where we don't see what happens on the train. The Doctor explains that everyone has been teleported inside the TARDIS. He saved everybody.
He did a lot in like 6 seconds.
Yeah. And then tried to find out where Gus was. Gus triggered a failsafe, blew up the train. And then the Doctor dropped everyone off
in the nearest
city, but then dropped Clara off like to take a nap on a rock on the beach.
Hey. As a lizard person, I love me a nap on a hot rock.
I do love this image of just like the train exploding and Clara wakes up to find the Doctor just like doodling in the sand.
Yeah, he's literally just like, I'm surprised he wasn't fully digging a hole. He strikes me as a beach autistic digging a hole.
Can't imagine where I've heard that before. I feel like someone on this podcast has told the story about digging a big hole at the beach.
Can't imagine who
that would be.
We've had quite a few Sorry, everyone. We've had quite a few autistics on this show, Zach, so it literally could have been any of us.
But yeah, you see him doodling and he's explaining it to Clara, and Clara goes, so you were just pretending to be heartless. You were actually going to save her the whole
and
time.
And then he does my favorite thing. My favorite thing, Zach, ding, 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 ding. He just shifts his eyes over for like a third of a second and then looks back at Clara. And just that eye shift of like, if that's what you need to tell yourself.
Yeah. His response is, would that make you feel better?
Yes.
Which is like, wait, what?
Yep.
It also feels very appropriate to Capaldi's doctor too, yep. Of this, like, it's not that I'm heartless. It's that I have like to do the right thing requires me to make tough decisions, which both makes the previous episode better and worse in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Better in the sense that, like, you do understand where the doctor's coming from of this, like, you have to make tough decisions, but it still is like, is the doctor trying to make Clara more like him?
Yeah.
And if so, that's still kind of grossly manipulative.
Yeah.
And then the doctor, they're back on the TARDIS and the doctor's talking with the engineer, and the engineer's like, oh yeah, I really like all your
I'm not going to pretend like I understand what half of this is, but I will tell you, you do need some new parts.
I could tell some parts are burnt out. You should get those fixed. And the doctor basically invites him to be the next companion. And he's like, I think that'll change a man. I really like, the doctor's like, oh yeah, quite a few times. Like 12 times, in fact.
I liked Perkins.
Yeah, Perkins was a fun character for this episode.
Specifically liked him giving the doctor the train schematics and guest list.
And he's like, you got those pretty fast. And he's like, oh, yes, obviously I must be working with the mummy. Or perhaps I've been looking into this myself for a while. Which is just a very, like, it's a very good way to give both character and exposition.
Yep.
I appreciated that.
It's very little guy artificer.
Yeah,
you know, our favorite character choice for many shows.
For mine's especially all the paradox of the world.
Yep.
But then Clara is like clearly been thinking about what the doctor had said on the beach for a while, and says, "Is this like an addiction for you? Like going around and making the tough choices?" And the doctor's like, "I don't know. You don't really know if something's an addiction until you try to give it up," which is sort of true. Because I know a few people who didn't find out until their friends tried to get them to give something up. Until someone stepped in, I was like, I think you have a problem.
Yeah.
But there is sort of an element of truth to that. And then Clara has a phone call with Danny, and Danny's like, so are you done with him? And she's like, yeah, I think I'm done. Mission accomplished. Boop. So we're hanging out tomorrow, yeah?
Which I don't love, because I'm like, girl,
you can't tell him you love him and also lie to him, not to his face because it was over the phone, but still.
It's one of those where it's like, I understand that it would be strange to literally have this be the like final send off.
Yeah.
We just saw Clara be upset and yell at the doctor and cry and scream and slam a door. To then just have it end with like, oh, we had a cute little train adventure. Like six people died. I woke up on a beach. Like
he drew a picture of me in the sand.
And then it washed away and he was drawing around a rock, actually. So still trying to figure out how that worked. But so I am curious to see how the fallout of what happened. Because now that I have been back on my reality TV binge watching,
mm-hmm.
It's not good for my brain. This only happens like once every 4 years. I get one that I get a steady stream of once a week for like 8 weeks. And it comes out once a year. But then I watch older shows. Is it like an addiction, Cassie? It's not an addiction because I can stop anytime. Okay. But What I really like about reality TV, and I promise I'll bring this back to Doctor Who eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Now having a brain that is more wired for tracking story,
mm-hmm.
It's way easier to watch reality TV and understand like, oh, everything that they are saying is being chopped and butchered on the editing floor.
Mm-hmm.
So the stories and the narratives that we are seeing are not necessarily all that has happened,
mm-hmm.
but you can definitely then keep track and ping when it's like, oh, this story beat's dropping right now. It's going to come back and bite us later in the ass. Mm. Like there was one where they were like, oh, somebody make sure that the coffee machine works. We don't want somebody to order and then have it not work. And then like not 15 minutes later, somebody orders an espresso martini and they're like, nobody got the coffee machine working. It's like, yeah, because you, what's the term? Not Chekhov's gun.
I mean, Chekhov's gun is sort of it, but it's like you planted a seed.
Yeah. And so the phone call with Danny and having it be like, oh, yeah, I'm done hanging up. All right. He was the one that was against it. Turns out he's totally chill with it. Yeah,
this whole last hurrah thing was his idea and he's changed his mind.
Yeah, I'm not lying. I would never lie. Why would I lie? Let's go.
She's lying to both of them a lot right now. Because it was like, that wasn't Danny was the one who, you know, said that he was going to like basically warned her about making a choice. But this seemed to be Clara's idea of the last hurrah.
Mm-hmm. It was Clara's idea to get mad. It was Clara's idea to have this be the last hurrah. Danny and the doctor are literally both being like, okay, like you do what's ever going to make you happy.
Yeah.
We will support whatever you need to do to be happy.
And this is one of those times where
then Clara's saying, oh, it's like an addiction, right? And then immediately turning around and be like, well, yep, everything's fine now. We're good. Woo!
Yeah, I'll keep shooting heroin. It's fine. I can do that. I'm not addicted to it. It's fine.
Yay, all right. 100 years, Dr. Clara.
And I like the doctor being like, oh, really? Okay, we can go somewhere. Let's go somewhere right now. You want to see planets? I got loads of planets for you. And, you know, I talk about how there isn't a romantic energy between Clara and the doctor. They're like this just very intense friendship because there is a level of where she's like, shut up and show me some planets. That just sounds very like we're going to a planet to have sex right now, which is obviously isn't the like true implication. But there's a way that she delivers it. That's like very like we're very intense right now.
In a normal relationship. Yes. In a special doctor relationship, shut up and show me some planets means we're going to go see planet. You're going to tell me all about that planet. We're not going to do anything else cool on the planet. You're just going to talk to me about it.
We're going to go to the shrub planet, the planet covered in weed. Awesome. Speaking of drugs.
Shrub planet just reminds me of that one episode of Futurama where it's the planet that's completely covered in trees. I'm just falling through it for like 15 minutes.
Knowing how often these things go wrong, though, I imagine they get there and it's like the Super Bowl halftime show where it's shrubs, but they're actually people.
They're getting paid $1,100 to
to wiggle around in grass.
Yeah.
They get there and Clara's like, is that Bad Bunny? And Lady Gaga, what's she doing here?
I thought Lady Gaga was Italian. She's Puerto Rican now.
Yeah, I really like that episode. I think Jamie Matheson is the writer of that episode, and I think he really knocked this one out of the park.
Pacing was good. Everything was
good. I think the twist works. The character dynamics really good. I think he wrote
like the only qualms I had, I think, were like issues with just
you had like minor aesthetic,
and then hang-ups. Also like here's the surprise thing. I also have to remind myself we are watching a story unfold in 45 minutes.
Yeah,
stories that could be full length feature films.
Yeah, like this I would have loved. I mean, I don't know that it would work as a two parter. I don't think it's an interesting enough setting to hold up for an hour and a half.
You would have to have if it were to be there would have to be more establishing stuff of Clara deciding.
There had to be more going on.
There would have to have been a discussion with Clara and Danny about this like last hurrah that she's going to do and have more emotional impact when she does say, nope, we're all good. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
And have some kind of B plot where somebody's smuggling. Speaking of drugs.
I could see them like adding more stuff to the episode, but for what it is, I think it's great. I think
yep, it's perfectly.
And I really, fine. Really like the way he writes the doctor. I think he writes, he writes Capaldi in a very real. I think this was how they wanted him to feel last episode.
Is Baker Capaldi's favorite doctor?
I don't know for certain.
Because they certainly do like to give him a lot of allusions.
Yeah, it certainly feels like it at times. And I don't know if that's Capaldi's choice or if that's the writer's choice, or if that's just the way things are working out. Like, if it's not,
that could even be something that I'm picking up on because I like four.
Like I said, the way I think they wanted the Doctor to feel way more like this in the last episode, where it is like there is a flippancy to it, but it's not so egregious that it feels inhuman.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a part of it where the professor is like seeing the mummy and he's describing it. And he's like, give me as much information as you can so we can save the next one. And he's like, what do you mean the next one? Why can't you you're not gonna be able to save me? And he's like, that is the implication. Yes, this is probably the end for you, but make it count. Details, please. And specifically the way he delivers the line details, please, where he like gets a big grin on and he's like trying almost do like a salesman pitch of like, please give me some information so I can work on this. That feels more like akin to the Doctor we have known.
Yes.
Rather than like the, this is your choice. Bye.
Mm-hmm.
That this feels way more in line with it. I think Jamie Matheson did a great job. And he writes the next episode too, which is another one of my favorites. And I think you're really going to like it. It's called Flatline.
Okay.
Yeah, I will get a little, I don't want to spoil too much of it, but we'll get into it. we'll get into it on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? Well, I might have suspected you'd be here, seeing as you're listening to the podcast. Thanks for that, by the way. It means a lot. I hope you all enjoyed another episode. I know Cassie and I had a lot of fun making it. If you liked it, please be sure you are subscribed so you get updates for future episodes. And if you'd like to support us directly, you can find us over on Patreon at patreon.com/whoismydoctor, where for as little as $1 a month, you can get episodes of this podcast a whole week early. That means right now, people over on Patreon are getting our episode on Flatline. Special thanks, as always, to our Big Daddy Dalek patrons, Andrew Blewett, David Gansel, Travis Aiken, and Daniel Lindgren. Next week, we're getting flat. Like, really flat. So we'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.